Kevin Bieksa, who is a badass on a Sea-Doo, apparently joining us here on Tim and Sid. Kevin, we'll get to that in a second. How's the family? How you doing, man? How you holding up? It's been a while.
We're doing good. We're doing really good. We came over the border 2 weeks today and had our mandatory quarantine, and today was the last day, so it's nice to be able to get out again and be a normal person for a change.
Kevin Bieksa joining us here on Tim and Sid. Now, Sixero referred to your abilities on a Sea-Doo, and a lot of people are doing Trick Shot for Snowy, which is awesome to raise money for ALS. And it looked like you combined with your son from a trampoline to a Sea-Doo. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, we're having some fun with it. We just thought of different things. We couldn't leave our property, and we're thinking of different things to do that were different and unique from the few that I saw and I researched. So my wife filmed it, and my son was shooting bombs, and I was driving around trying to catch him. He actually had a couple perfect shots, and they hit my palm of my hand and fell into the water. So most of the fails were my fault, but it was just a fun way to kill about an hour.
Nice.
So how many takes were needed for you on the Sea-Doo to just make the grab and find the one in terms of the one you posted, the video you posted? How many takes?
How many takes? I would say, honestly, probably 10. And I'd say I'll take half the blame. Five of them were definitely my fault. A couple of them were the person filming it. It was a camera error. And then my son had a couple flubs.
Is that the son that played in the Quebec Pee Wee tournament when we talked to you and you were in Quebec City?
Yeah. I just have the one son. He's 12 years old. Nice. And he loved being in that video and just shooting pucks or balls.
Nice. So we were talking about the fact that there doesn't seem to be a lot of disagreement on how the NHL should move forward. But I can't help but think that there are a lot of guys that are skeptical about the situations that they're walking into. From what you've heard from guys in and around the league, what are the conversations like?
Well, I know I did a radio show a couple of days ago in Vancouver, and I know some of those some of the quotes I had and some of the things I was talking about maybe put people off a little bit, was maybe contradictory to what they're hoping or thinking. But I just know from the guys that I've talked to that playing is still a long ways away. And I know this July 10th training camp phase 3 or whatever, the announcement in the media caught a lot of players off guard. A lot of guys weren't aware of this, didn't agree to it. I know Patrick Kane was vocal in the media about, well, listen, like there's a long ways to go here. We're obviously, everyone's hopeful. I'm a fan as well. I obviously do a little bit of work with covering games, and I'd love to have hockey back. I just know there's so many things to cover, and there's so many obstacles to overcome still before they're playing again. And I'd say, honestly, like half the guys that I've talked to don't even want to play. They think that the season should just be called and start fresh in the fall. And never have I, has there been really a period where you've gone 3-4 months without even skating, without being on the ice once. So this is a really unprecedented time. And a lot of guys are, they're worried, I think, about their bodies as well, being able to perform in a couple of weeks of training camp and then playing games. So I'm a skeptic by nature, but I'm hopeful that they could find a way to play. But it's for me, there's so much to overcome.
Kevin Bieksa here on Tim and Sid. Kevin, how many of the guys who expressed the opinion of let's just cancel it are on what you would call quote unquote cup contenders? However you define that, like how many of those guys are on teams that you would say? I know it's a tough question to even pose, because how do you handicap this field in something like this? I hear you, but let's say top four in each conference. Like how many players are on those teams? Would you say?
I don't even know who the top four are in each conference, but I mean, it doesn't matter who I've talked to, but it's just they're all guys that are playing that would be playing, and they're all guys that are on teams that I think any team has a shot these days. You look at St. Louis last year, they win the Stanley Cup and, last place in the league. Everyone has a chance. All you got to do is get in, right? And at this point, too, like there's so many guys that haven't been training like they would, and there's so many guys that haven't skated. You're starting over from fresh. That evens the playing field more than ever. I think all the momentum from the season's gone. everything that the teams have accomplished, you're starting fresh in a whole new training camp and new team and everything. So, I mean, I think hockey players love the game more than any other athletes in their sport. And I think they care about the fans more than any athlete in any other sport. So I think they'll at the end of the day, they're probably going to concede a lot and try to get back any way they can. But there's a lot of, you know, financial obstacles. There's a lot of safety and health obstacles that they still have to talk about. And I know they haven't even talked about yet.
The one counter
anyway,
that I could think.
Keep in mind, this is my opinion, though, right? Like, I don't mean to be.
Of course. Oh, I hear you. Here, yeah, but, yeah. I hear you.
This is my opinion just from the knowledge that I have, but take it for what it's worth.
Right. And it's important to add that we assume it and we know you enough to know that that's what you're doing. But for those who don't know, this is Kevin's opinion on what we're talking about. The one counter that I would offer on the skeptical point of view, because I'm naturally a skeptic myself, and like we don't even know what a regular season would start or when it would start, or like even if you called this season, it's done, no Stanley Cup is handed out, there's no guarantee that we get any sort of semblance of a season next year. That, and I think that's why a lot of people are pushing to get this done, because you might not get next season.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty for sure. And you know, from the owner's perspective, they're just trying to, like, everybody's lost here, right? Like, it's a pandemic. Yes. The world's been shut down for 3 months. Everybody's lost lots of money. Owners have lost lots of money. That's unfortunately the risk of doing business, right? There's business risk, and a pandemic or a health scare shutting down the world, that's part of your business risk. So obviously they want to recapture any revenue they can. They want to get the game back. It's a really crazy time in the world right now, and I'm sure the world needs entertainment and they need sport to kind of give them something good to look forward to. So I think everybody wants to figure out a way to get this thing done. It's hard, though. It's really hard because it's unprecedented. There's no blueprint for it, and there's a lot of issues to cover.
Kevin Bieksa here on Tim and Sid. I know Tim mentioned, you know, you might not get next season either, or it might not start till January 1st. Like, there are no knowns here. And if you're a team outside of the playoffs, like, say, a Buffalo Sabres, you're not going to play a hockey game maybe till January 1st. So, and maybe that led to some of what we saw yesterday. Kev, just your thoughts on how many people lost their jobs with the Sabres yesterday. And if you're a player around the league, or based on some of what you're hearing from players around the league, what do they really think of the Buffalo Sabres? Because this is not a great look.
No, I saw that yesterday, and I mean, I thought they were really high on Jason Botterill, and it's a franchise that's just struggled for a long time now, right? Ever since basically Hasek left, and it's always. But if you look at them, they're always at the top of the league at the start of the season. So they always come out of the gates really, really quick, and because they always seem to be a young, youthful, highly skilled team. And then, you know, maybe they don't have the veterans really to kind of keep the ship going ahead, and they falter kind of halfway through the year, and then they end up at the bottom of the league every year. It's just cyclical with the Sabres. But I don't know enough about the team. I mean, I have like one or two friends on the team. That's about it. So I'm not sure I can comment on the status of that organization. But they have half their season ticket holders are Canadians. I know they have a passionate fan base, and they have a fan base that deserves a team that can make the playoffs and be competitive. So I don't have the answers for the Buffalo Sabres, but I hope they can figure it out.
Let me ask you this in relation to just NHL teams, period. How important is leadership? Because to me, it seems like whenever you flip, whether it be a GM or a coach, and you keep turning over, it would be hard to get that base of leadership to be on the same page. Is that what you can see on, like, for me, that's what I see on good teams, really good leadership. But I don't know what comes first, the chicken or the egg. Like, where do you see the importance of leadership on good teams that stay good or bad teams that are crap?
It's super, super underrated, in my opinion. And it's honestly the difference from a team going far and a team faltering. And good leadership, like good leadership, like, we're not just talking about like in front of the media doing the right interviews, but Yeah, the problem with good leadership is you really have to have a pulse on your team to know if you have good leadership. And, you know, by having a pulse on your team, from my experience in my day, a lot of the GMs, because the general managers aren't around the team, but like, I know the general managers like to think they have a pulse on the team, and maybe they do, but they're not in the dressing room every day. They're not on the a lot of the travel and the trips and the hotels and the flights. They don't really know what's going on with the players and how they're feeling. And, you know, if the leaders are leading, if the guys are, you know, really care about the older guys, or they think they're a bit of a joke, like, you have to rely a little bit more. Like, historically, they've relied on the trainers, the training staff, the equipment guys. And those are the guys that are in the trenches and around the guys every day. Those are the guys that probably have a better pulse on the team. And most good management that I played for would talk to the trainers all the time, talk to them. What are the guys like? How are they feeling? You know, how are the older guys doing? Is it getting negative? Right. But I don't know how that goes now. But I really think having good leadership can keep your team consistently competitive over the course of a season, because when it gets negative, it's like anything else. It's contagious and it snowballs, and you really need a good group of guys. And then, and unfortunately, they're not always your best players. They can't always be your best top players. It's just every team's different. Every group's different. The dynamics are different. So I think you really have to know your groove to know if you're getting good leadership.
Is it an easy answer for me to ask you who's the best leader that you played with, or does that become difficult?
No, it's difficult. I was lucky. I had a lot of really, you know what, go back in my career to the 2004-2005 lockout, where the whole season was canceled. And, it, you know, I played the season before, I played like the last four games of the year after my college senior year. And so don't really count that. But Dallas Eakins was my captain that year. You know, I was around him for a month, and he was great. Didn't play a whole lot with him. But the following year, I had Nolan Baumgartner, who's now the assistant coach for the Vancouver Canucks. He was my captain then. And he was one of the best captains, if not the best captain I ever had. And that's how I started my career. So I was lucky to have him. And then the next year, I have Mike Keane, who, you know, won three cups of three different teams. So that was the start for me. And then I go to Vancouver and I have Trevor Linden and I have Marcus Naslund and I have Brendan Morrison. So, you know, and then obviously the Sedin twins, they're kind of more my age and I grew up with those guys and they were obviously great leaders. But my leaders earlier in my career were awesome leaders and really set the tone for the rest of my career.
Kevin Bieksa, who yesterday turned 39 years of age.
Doctor.
A slightly belated happy birthday. Kevin, quickly, before we let you go, what would 39-year-old Kevin Bieksa say to 19-year-old Kevin Bieksa? What advice would you have for him?
39-year-old Kevin would probably say, hey, bud, in 20 years you'll be in your prime, so stay with it.
Perfect. Awesome. Perfect. Enjoy the sea, dude. Enjoy the family.
Obviously.
I got better with age, Kevin. It happens to us sometimes. I got better with age, thinner, better looking. It happened to me.
Yeah, if you exactly better looking for sure for you. I saw your pictures.
Yes. Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Be well. Happy birthday. Stay well, and thanks for doing this.
Appreciate it. Talk again soon, guys. Thanks.